From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This past week, as Americans were preparing to vote, Nicaraguans went to the polls. They elected Sandinista leader Daniel Ortega, the man the Reagan administration spent millions of dollars to kick out of office. Joining me now to discuss Ortega's win and its potential impact is Richard Lapper. He's the Latin American editor for the Financial Times, and he joins us now from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm very pleased to welcome him to this month's Backstory. Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for inviting me.
Were you surprised that Daniel Ortega won enough of the vote to avoid a runoff?
Not really. I mean, I think that we've been expecting Ortega to secure the sort of 35% or more that he needed to win this. The rules have been changed. Things tended to favor him. And I think that in particular, you know, the U.S., by recommending that people vote against Ortega, actually stirred certain nationalist sentiment in Nicaragua and in a way helped the victory.
Oliver North went down there with some others to work against Ortega. Is Oliver North remembered with any fondness in Nicaragua?
I'm sure he's very popular amongst his former comrades and the Contra fighters. But I think that the problem is, look, I mean, the U.S. was supporting, I mean, Oliver North and the Contra were supporting one of two or three opposition candidates, you know, the anti-Ortega vote was badly divided between into three, so there was very little chance that you know, I think once that the American ambassador recommended that people don't vote for Ortega, it kind of created a bit of a bandwagon effect.
Well, his
and whatever else happened, whoever else people supported, Ortega was always going to win.
Will Ortega's policies be all that different from the current president, Enrique Bolaños?
Well, obviously, I mean, they will be different to some extent. I mean, Ortega will pursue quite close links with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Sandinista mayors have already been taking delivery of Venezuelan, cheap Venezuelan oil. So it's quite possible, I think, also that Ortega will look to Cuba to receive to get medical assistance from Cuba. We're also already seeing thousands of Cuban doctors in Venezuela and in Bolivia, and I think we're likely to see a repetition of that in Nicaragua. But I think beyond that, it's actually quite difficult, a limited amount that Nicaragua can do, given the kind of fragility of its economy, and they don't actually produce an awful lot down there.
Well, Ortega, after he was elected, said that he'll work with the United States. So obviously he is not going to follow Hugo Chavez's lead in everything.
No, I mean, I think the fact is, you know, economically, Nicaragua needs the U.S. You know, its textile exports and the maquila zones there account for a lot of their dollar revenues. There's an awful lot of Nicaraguans living in the United States sending back remittances to Nicaragua. That's an important source of revenue for the country and also for the government. And you know, I think that they'll be looking. I think more pragmatically towards Venezuela and Cuba in terms of the aid that they'll receive. I don't think we're going to see really any kind of ideological crusade here, because I don't think Nicaragua is in a position where it can embark on that kind of endeavor. I think it's going to be quite a different government to the one that took power, you know, after the guerrilla war of the 1970s and ruled Nicaragua between 1979 and 1990. Less ideological, more pragmatic, I think they will try to develop links with the U.S. and maintain links, I should say, with the U.S.
Well, Nicaragua is the second poorest country of the Americas, only second to Haiti. Is that one of the reasons Nicaraguans were willing to give Ortega a second chance, even though when he was president, the inflation rate was 30,000%?
Yeah, I think people have got slightly short memories about these things. I mean, you've got to remember that a lot of people in Nicaragua, a lot of younger voters, won't have very clear memories of the 1980s. I think that the last 15 years have not been, you know, marked by tremendous economic success. There's still an awful lot of social exclusion and poverty, as you say, in the country. And, you know, Ortega's a classic kind of populist leader. He's made big promises, and I think people are prepared to vote for him on that basis.
Well, he also could claim that some of the problems he had were as a result of U.S. sanctions and the fact that he was forced to fight the Contras, and that may even be true to some degree. But how much has he changed since the mid-1980s? Has his politics changed much? Because he has embraced religion and changed his position on abortion, for example.
Yeah, I think you could say that he's become more pragmatic to be favorable to him and maybe much more opportunist and less idealistic, really. One can be quite cynical about this. I mean, Ortega has done virtually everything he can to preserve a chance of regaining the presidency. He's made pacts and alliances with his worst enemies. He's basically been running Nicaragua behind the scenes for the last 6 years by allying with the Liberal Party, a very corrupt party, and a leader already accused and convicted for embezzlement. He's ran on his electoral campaign. He ran with his running mate, was a former Contra leader. He's turned his previous convictions on his head with this sort of stance on abortion. I think he'd stop at nothing to get back to the presidential palace.
At the same time, he did make some anti-American speeches during the campaign. So he seems to be playing both sides against the middle. Has he been working since he was voted out of office in 1990 to regain power?
Yeah, I mean this is the third time he's run for the presidency.
And lost in 1996 when Arnaldo Alemán won. That's the man you were talking about earlier. He is serving a 20-year term in prison for embezzlement. And then in 2001, Enrique Bolaños won.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's preserved control of the Sandinista Front, you know, the party that he helped found.
Wasn't he behind efforts to impeach President Bolaños last year?
Yeah, I mean, basically, with Alemán, basically they've been making life next to impossible for the previous government.
Why weren't they successful?
Well, they were successful in a sense. I mean, they weren't successful in taking Bolaños out, but they were successful in reducing the government's capacity to govern. I think. I mean, one of the reasons that Nicaragua has had such a difficult time with it economically is that governance has been so weak, and the Sandinistas have got an awful lot to do with that.
My guest is Richard Lapper, who's the Latin American editor for the Financial Times. We're talking about Daniel Ortega's comeback as the now newly elected president of Nicaragua. At the beginning of the campaign, he was only polling 20% and was in third place. So something must have happened. He must have run a very good campaign.
Well, I think several things happened in the course of the year. I mean, one of them was the death after a heart attack of an alternative left-wing candidate who'd been a Sandinista and been in opposition, been an opponent, strong opponent of Ortega, former mayor of Managua, Hetty Lewis. That was one thing that helped Ortega. The other thing was that when the recommendations from the American embassy not to vote for Ortega worked in Ortega's advantage. We've seen this before. You know, when the U.S. recommend and take a kind of very interventionist stance, as they did in Bolivia in 2002, when they recommended that people vote against Evo Morales, it tends to backfire. It's quite sensible to keep a it's quite sensible to keep a low profile on these matters, I think.
What about his stepdaughter's accusations of rape and molestation in 1998? Why didn't that damage his political career?
Well, I think some of them began to stick, you know. I mean, this was widely publicized. His stepdaughter insists that the charges are true. And so, clearly, you know, that didn't help him an awful lot.
Well, he just won, so it didn't seem to have hurt him enough to keep him out of the presidency.
Well, it didn't hurt him amongst his hardcore supporters, and you've got to remember that the Sandinista Front have maintained a pretty successful act over the years. You know, they're a tightly run ship, and Ortega's plays a big role in that.
And then the suit got thrown out of court.
And the suit got thrown out of court. Yeah.
Does Ortega's election reflect a trend within Central America? Do you think this will provide momentum for other leftist parties?
Well, I mean, I think we've seen a leftist trend throughout Latin and Central America for a couple of years now. It's a strange leftist trend because it includes, you know, hardline anti-Americans like Hugo Chavez is probably the most important figures who have emerged alongside, you know, the kind of renaissance Fidel Castro, who's obviously on his last legs health-wise, but his regime is as resistant and as tough and defensively strong as ever. And then we've got these new figures like Evo Morales, who came to power in December last year, and now Ortega. You know, so four people on the kind of far left or the hard left of the political spectrum. And then we've got a number of more moderate figures in Chile, where we've had 16 years of center-left government, really, since Pinochet left the political stage in 1989. And then we've got a number of other moderate left-wing figures. Lula, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in Brazil, being perhaps the most significant of these. Nestor Kirchner in Argentina. We've got a center-left guy in Peru. And I think, you know, this shift really reflects, you know, in the 90s, people thought that Latin America was just going to embrace open markets and democracy and just develop overnight. And it didn't happen that way. And I think in the aftermath of some of the failures of the 90s, some of the crises, people looked back to the left for more emphasis on social policy. And that's why we've seen this shift towards, people call it a pink tide, rising in the region. And Ortega's reemergence is very much part of that.
Well, he said during the campaign that his winning would spread the revolution begun with Castro and Chavez. And he's received a lot of congratulations. Fidel Castro wrote a letter of congratulations. Hugo Chavez is offering Nicaragua cheap oil as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, Venezuela's offering a lot of countries cheap oil and has delivered cheap oil to a lot of countries, so there's nothing particularly exceptional in that. And as I said, you know, Sandinista mayors in Nicaragua have already been taking delivery of cheap oil from Chavez. But, the point is they talk about, there's a lot of rhetoric here. You know, what actually does spreading the revolution mean in 2006? You know, and what capacity, I mean, when the Sandinistas took power in 1979, there was a genuine attempt to try to transform Nicaragua along socialist lines. This is the era of the Cold War. This is when, you know, the Soviet Union and Cuba and the Eastern Europe were still a bloc and had their own views about how societies could be run, and Nicaragua pretty much followed that model, certainly after the first couple of years of the Sandinista government. That is completely out of the question now. What you have is a populism based on oil and on Venezuela and oil to a very large extent, and Nicaragua will be part of that. But I don't think it represents a massive alternative. It's still going to need its economic connection with the United States.
Well, the Bush administration has called Ortega hoodlum in the past, but Condoleezza Rice announced the United States will recognize the election.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that, you know, the election last week in the U.S., I mean, you've got to remember that Ortega and the whole of Nicaragua is a bit of a totem for the right wing of the Republican Party in the U.S., who are, in a sense, are the big losers of the congressional election. And I think that means that we're likely to see a more pragmatic approach to Ortega, just as we're seeing a more pragmatic approach from the State Department under Condoleezza Rice and Tom Shannon, the Latin American policy specialist, in the rest of the region. I was in Bolivia very recently, and it's very evident that the U.S. are doing all they can to try and work with Evo Morales, despite Morales' pronouncements against the U.S. You know, he's been very vociferous, very explicit in his anti-Americanism. Nonetheless, the realities are that these countries need to work in the hemisphere. They need the American connection in many ways, not least because so many Latin Americans are actually working in the United States.
But you said earlier that Nicaragua doesn't have many natural resources. The other countries that you've been discussing, Bolivia, Venezuela, Brazil, are rich in natural resources. So what can Nicaragua do to improve its economy?
Well, I think it's a very difficult one, Matt. I mean, I think it needs, it's been exporting labor, essentially, to the United States. It's got some agricultural exports, but they're pretty small, and agricultural commodities are not the commodities that in general have been doing so well. It doesn't really have the mining wealth or the oil wealth that Venezuela has or that Brazil has, as you say. So I think, Nicaragua's going to be helped. No doubt it will be helped by its relationship with Venezuela. The oil bill is going to fall quite significantly. It's going to be helped by the health services it pulls in from Cuba, but it is going to need to work, with the United States, I think, in terms of trade and labor flows.
Will this scare off foreign investment?
I don't think I think the key issue here is whether last year Nicaragua, along with three, four other Central American countries and the Dominican Republic, signed a big trade deal with the United States, which, bound in some of the tariff advantages that they've enjoyed really for the best part of 20 years. It bound in permanently those advantages, and that was designed to pave the way for a wave of inward investment in things like textiles and electronics and so on.
Is that CAFTA?
CAFTA, DR CAFTA. Now, that was signed, 2005. It's come into effect. Ortega's been, it doesn't like that agreement. Whether, he looks to revoke it, to overturn it, is another matter. I think that investment prospects will be badly affected if he does. So I would expect him to, I think we might see, a certain amount. Again, we may see a more pragmatic Ortega in this area.
Well, he has to keep in... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, I'm just going to say that clearly when you're talking about investment in Nicaragua, a lot of it does come from the U.S. A lot of the boom in investment in things like real estate and tourism has been coming from Americans. And it's difficult to see, simply given the geography of Nicaragua, where it's going to get the investment from if it's not from there.
Too bad they didn't build a canal through Nicaragua. That would have brought in some serious income. But Ortega has to keep in mind that 59% of Nicaraguans have said that they would emigrate if they were given the chance.
Well, that's it's a very poor country. Governability has been rule of law, the court system, all that sort of stuff, the red tape in terms of setting up business, a bit of a nightmare. So a lot of Nicaraguans do look to the United States for their sort of personal futures, as it were. An awful lot of people look to emigrate, not just the poor, but middle class people as well. A lot of people look north. So it is very difficult. I mean, geography really traps Nicaragua in many ways.
How do the leftists of Brazil react to an election like this? Do they welcome it, or do they see it as being problematic?
I mean, from a Latin American point of view, you've got to bear in mind that places like Brazil and Argentina see Nicaragua as a tiny country that is very little to do with them. Brazil's 100 economy is you know, sort of massively bigger. I was going to say 100 times. It's not 100 times bigger, but it's very, very much bigger than Nicaragua. Nicaragua isn't even at the speck, really, as far as the bigger Latin American countries are concerned. But, you know, these are tiny countries in Central America. And so their importance in terms of being trendsetters has to be taken in proportion, really. I mean, one thing for Brazil to take Venezuela quite seriously, which it does, or Chile or Argentina. Another thing to pay an awful lot of. I mean, they're interested in what goes on, but I don't think that they think that you know, Daniel Ortega's victory in Nicaragua has any kind of relevance for them, really.
Richard Lapper is the Latin American editor for the Financial Times. I want to thank him so much for participating in this month's Backstory, talking about Daniel Ortega, once again, the president of Nicaragua. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.